The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Wrestling Omakase. It is episode number 223. This week, first of all, I am pleased to be joined by my fan, which you can hear in the background, I'm sure, on the track, as I just tested it, but you're going to have to deal with it, because it's like 100 degrees here in New York City, so the fan is the only thing keeping us from dying. My air conditioner is much louder, and I had to turn that off, which Quinlan wasn't happy about. Quinlan's here, too. Hello, Quinlan.
I can really hear the AC, though.
You can really hear the AC. Okay. Trust me. Like, the AC is so loud. I mean, the fan sounds loud enough already, but, like, they're gonna have to deal with that. But it's one of these fans that, too, has, like, a little misting to it. You put, like, cold water on the bottom. It feels pretty good. I don't know. Are you getting
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels pretty good. So, Quinlan, what's up? How you been doing?
Okay.
We just went out. Don't gotta talk about what happened on the air. Yeah. But, stressful. But everything's cool now. And we're back in my room. Quinlan, I played my my new Sonos Arc for Quinlan, and he was not that impressed. He was like, eh. He's not an audio file, I guess. Didn't really care about the music effects, huh?
There was sound.
It's on 9 different channels.
Okay.
They separate out the instruments, and the vocals sound so clear out of the center track. You didn't care?
Mm.
No, not really. Okay. So what's been up with you?
Nothing.
What have you been doing all week? I really haven't talked to you all week.
Stuff.
Okay. Like what?
Stressing out about Otakon and then finding out none of my panels are happening anyway. So,
oh. You know. Well, you're still on a panel.
Yeah.
We're on, what, Final Fantasy 14?
Yes.
I have two panels. They're both my indie music panels. But yeah, both the video game panels I submitted with you and Henry got declined as well. But if you really want to present a panel at Otakon, apparently the key is to do it about dolls. because that'll get through every time.
Or idols.
Or idols.
Or indie music.
Or indie music.
Or
well, look, indie music is great. Well, okay. VTubers should be in the fucking con. That shit is really popular.
Okay. I don't know. I find them confusing.
Well, they're like that
thing that's on your wall there, Miku. Like, what is that?
I know what she is,
but she's not real, right?
No, but
so then
okay. VTubers and Vocaloids are different. She like Vocaloids are like there was a real person that like you know gave their voice for it, but like you can synthesize the Vocaloid to say whatever the fuck you want. A VTuber is really just a person doing voice acting for a virtual character. That's all it is. Okay. It's not like you can just make the character say anything you want. You still have to have a person voice it. It's very different from a Vocaloid. But yeah, so Quinlan was pointing at Hatsune Miku, which is on, and I have a Miku Expo poster on my wall, so that I got when I went to the concert. We were supposed to go to that concert, and
yeah, it never happened.
It never happened because of COVID-19.
You guys heard of that?
Yeah, I don't know if they've heard of COVID. But yeah, so... nothing else is happening? We're going to Atlantic City next weekend.
Oh, yeah.
It's very exciting. Next Friday. Mostly, not really to gamble that much. Mostly just to go to that restaurant. And so there's going to be, we're going to do, apparently our friends are like organizing a sake tasting.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy here texts me. I'm going to just read back the text. I'm going to read back the text I got here. And you guys can tell me how would you react if we got this text. Quote, yesterday, 5:22 p.m. We're going to do a sake tasting in the room in AC before dinner. Don't drink crap before it. End text. Now, that sounds a little aggressive, right? That sounds a little... It doesn't sound very lighthearted. Because when I asked Quinn, like, what the fuck is this text? You were like, oh, isn't this actually lighthearted or something? And I was like, no. You didn't say LOL at the end of it or something. Apparently, which you were passing on a message from our friend Rick... And he said, give him a heads up so he doesn't drink crap beforehand, LOL. That's a different message than, you know, than just, don't drink crap before it.
Okay, well, plan to anywhere. So.
I'm going down earlier than you guys. You guys are driving. I'm taking the bus from New York. My bus drops me off at Resorts, which has the Wet Willies at the back of it. And I am getting myself a frozen daiquiri. So that's what I'm doing as soon as I get off the bus. But, you know, I'll try to clear my palate between that. I'm not going to be a teetotaler for the next fucking 3 hours or whatever it's going to take for you guys to get down there with that New Jersey traffic. But, are you excited for the trip?
Yes.
Should be fun. Are you going to gamble at all?
If there's some minimums, maybe I'll play roulette if they aren't too high.
You got to find, what, a $10 table?
Yeah.
Because 15 is too high for roulette. Why, you don't want to play blackjack now?
There's not going to be any... I have a feeling there's not going to be any empty tables with a low buy-in.
There might be 15.
It's pretty high for blackjack.
Yeah.
You're the guy that fucking hates blackjack now. You prefer to play the game that you always lose $1,000 at.
I won.
Every once in a while, you win $10, so that's good.
Did I not win on my last trip? Didn't I provide you photographic evidence that I won on
my... 9 out of 10 times, you lose $1,000, but every once in a while, you win your $10 up, so it's the best game there.
Okay, yeah. Last time, I hit the all-tall small, so I won.
And I was not there, so I missed
it was 175-1, and I think I had $4 on it, so that was like $700 right there. And then it maybe came out ahead for the trip, just on that, so I don't know what you're talking about. Craps is great, but yes, I don't really like to play $15 craps either. So hopefully I can find $10. But it's a Friday night, so probably won't be in the middle of July too. So probably won't be able to.
You get free beach towels. So.
That is true for Borgata for some reason. It was such a weird email. I was like, come get your free beach towel. I was like, okay. It's like really what I so all the money we can afford to gamble. I don't think I can afford to buy my own beach towel.
This one's free.
It's a little weird. But anyway, we're mostly going just to go to that Izakaya at Borgata again. Because usually, you know, we go to Atlantic City in the summer for Anime Next, but it was canceled because it was just a little bit too early because, you know, with COVID and everything. So basically the same friend group that normally goes to Anime Next is just going to go down there to go to that restaurant and stuff and hang out. But there you go. I should not drink crap, everybody, because it'll ruin my palate for the sake tasting we're doing. Anything else you want to say about the trip?
No.
No? Let's see. Don't play any more slot machines.
Okay.
Anyway. So, we're here to do Tokyo Dome Retro Roulette. That's what we're here for. We did this once. I don't remember if that was on the Patreon or on the free feed.
What
but
is this on?
This is on the free feed. Okay. So the free feed people can listen to it.
So it's just any Tokyo Dome show? It doesn't have to be Wrestle Kingdom?
Yeah, any Tokyo Dome. We did this already! Okay. You don't remember?
Yeah, that's why I'm confirming.
Yeah. So any Tokyo Dome show. It doesn't have to be Wrestle Kingdom. It doesn't have to be New Japan. So I get six No, it can be anything. Last time I got an All Japan one.
Oh, yeah.
So any six shows. It can be the same six shows I got last time, as long as it's different matches. Actually, should I make it so it has to be different shows?
No, do it. No.
Let's do that. We already did those six shows. We'll do six different ones. So it'll be six different shows. It'll be a random match from each show, but not a main event, since I'm covering all the main events on the Patreon, which is a good transition to plugging the Patreon. So, if you are not signed up for the Wrestling Omakase Patreon, you can do that for only $5 at patreon.com/wrestlingomakase. What do you get for your money? What do you get for your $5? Do you know what you get for your $5, Quinlan?
More shows.
You get more shows. So we get, instead of every other week a full episode, you get every week, because I do two Patreon-exclusive episodes a month. We just did an episode with me and Chris Samsa this past week, reviewing the two Summer Struggle and Sapporo shows, previewing the next Tokyo Dome show, which is why, of course, we're doing this Tokyo Dome Retro Roulette again. So previewing Wrestle Grand Slam and Tokyo Dome, previewing the other Summer Struggle big matches. So that was a lot of fun. We did like 2 hours on it almost. So, you know, Chris and I had a lot of fun, and that's available right now if you're listening to on the Patreon. Along with that, you get my series covering every one match episode in order. So all the one match episodes, you know, are covered on there. All the Tokyo Dome main events. So we're in the middle of the New Japan versus UWFI trilogy right now. So right now that is we did both the Keiji Muto versus Takata matches from 95, and then up next is the Keiji Muto. Okay, you're like really getting up on the bed. Keiji Muto versus Takata matches. Up next is the Takata versus Hashimoto.
Getting up on this bed is like getting on a fucking horse or something. Jesus.
Because I have it on TV mode.
Yeah, I know.
Because it's a moving bed. Anyway.
So that means torture?
It feels great. What are you talking about? It's a great back support. Anyway. I thought you of all people would appreciate the back support. You're always complaining about your back.
Because I have back problems.
Okay, you should get talking on the mic if you want people to hear you, buddy.
Okay.
Takata and Hashimoto is next. You're like ruining my plug. So we're covering all the Tokyo Dome main events in order. Takata versus Hashimoto is next. It's a lot of fun. Again, not just New Japan, not just Wrestle Kingdom, all the Tokyo Dome main events. It'll take a long fucking time, especially since we take breaks to do other series and stuff. Just completed my Naito Tanahashi series, doing all the Naito Tanahashi matches in order. What's your favorite Naito Tanahashi match?
The one we were at.
That's the one I went with too. I give that and the Wrestle Kingdom 1-5 stars, but I just barely put the G1 one above it. So, anyway. Yes, all the Naito Tanahashi matches are on there. So you can also see that, or listen to that, I guess. It's not a video podcast. At patreon.com/wrestlingomakase. This is the worst plug of all time. But trust me, you get so much audio
Why
on
is
there.
It so bad?
Because you fucking interrupt me in the middle of it to be like, getting on your bed is like getting on a horse. And Nicole opened the door and like gave me a dirty look because I guess she wasn't expecting me to have started recording. And the whole fucking thing, it just totally threw me off. So anyway, I'm still paranoid about how loud this fan probably sounds,
no
but I don't want to die of heat exhaustion trying to record this episode. That's a great song by the Gig Name Boys.
Yes.
I don't know if I can get away putting that in my panel anymore though.
Unless you make it 18 plus. Why? You used to do it before.
I did it.
When it wasn't
18 plus, yeah. I mean, there's a scene where a man, like, masturbates through his pants. In that music video.
And there's other things.
There's a lot. Gang Name Boys.
I can't believe you could show B on there.
Well, it's not. She's not actually new.
I know, but she appears to be. I'm surprised they didn't.
But they never. But I got a video. I got a version of the video where she's censored now. So.
Oh, and there's another video.
Supercar B.
No, they're not. You couldn't play a
White Surf Style 5. Oh, drink.
No, you can play that.
White Surf Style 5?
No, you're right. You're right. No. Or Drinking Boys. You couldn't play that either.
White Surf Style 5 with the fucking the fucking domestic violence music video.
Yeah, but it was like a cartoonish thing.
I guess that was also a supercar one. Yeah, Japanese indie music videos are crazy, folks. Anyway, so I guess with that, we're gonna go pick our matches now. So we don't know what we're getting. We have no idea yet. Obviously, you know, if you looked at the show description, what we got already.
You can see the future.
So you can see the future. That's true. So, you know, if we got something funny, you already know, and we don't. It hasn't happened yet, so we don't know. That's how audio works, I guess. But yes, so give me one sec, and then we'll be back right after we've watched whatever the first match was. All right, so we just got finished watching our first match, which was from the SWS WrestleFest in Tokyo Dome show on March 30th, 1991. So this would have been a show that we covered already on the Omakase Patreon, which, you know, obviously I did the main event, which was Genichiro Tenryu and Hulk Hogan against the Road Warriors, Animal Warrior, and Hawk Warrior. It sure as shit was. But yes, the match we got here was, it's built on cage matches, a non-title match, I guess it is. The Intercontinental Champion, Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig, against the Texas Tornado, Kerry Von Erich. Not the two guys I expected to see when we sat down to do this series. I don't know.
No, me neither.
So,
well, the guy I really didn't expect to see was the ring announcer. But mostly because I didn't know he was still employed by WWF in the 90s.
Yeah, the ring announcer is Mel Phillips. Yeah.
Although for years I didn't know what he looked like until I was looking
at I had no idea he was a black guy.
Like 80s stuff on the network, 70s, 80s stuff, and most of them he's gone. They don't have him on there if he's on the show, but there are a couple in there where he pops in, and one time I was like, oh, that's, I've heard his name a million times, never knew what he looked like, didn't really want to know. And he was there. And so we got Mr. Perfect, who died in his 40s. And we have Mr. Kerry Von Erich, who committed suicide, and then we have this match.
I think he's still alive. Tom Phillips?
No, Phillips is dead.
Oh, he is? Okay.
Yes, he's dead. But that's the problem is what he was guilty of. At least the ref was one of the WWF refs, who was just a guy. I forget which one. I recognize him. I think he was still there in the 90s. He didn't die tragically or do anything horrible.
To our knowledge.
Yeah. But, you know. I want to hope so. One out of four isn't a tragic story. So, three of these guys could get an episode. Nah, Mr. Perfect couldn't get an episode of Dark Side of the Ring, but he did have a tragic death. Yeah. The other two, well, one of them hasn't yet. So I guess they haven't done the 80s.
They haven't done that yet, right?
No, they haven't done an episode on that yet.
Yeah,
I don't know. Dark Side of the Ring. Well, they got a lot to get through. Unfortunately. Yeah. So, you know,
the wonderful world of American wrestling.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't just cover America, remember? But it is mostly. Mostly America.
So the Super World of Sports. How familiar are you with this promotion?
Not really.
Do you know anything about them?
Not really.
So they are the Eyeglass Puro Company. So they are the company that was founded by Megane Super, the Eyeglass Company, by raiding Genichiro Tenryu and a bunch of other people from All Japan, raiding a few people from New Japan, and their goal was to start a new Puro Company. Because remember, this is the very start of the 90s. All these Japanese companies are really flush for cash still from the 80s. You know, the bubble economy in Japan. And, you know, the bubble has not yet quite burst. It's about to, which is why the SWS isn't around for very long. But at this point, like, this is the same guy who, there's a great anecdote in this. I think it's from Eggshells, the Chris Charlton book about the Tokyo Dome shows, where the guy who ran Megane Super once turned to one of his assistants and was like, you know who I want to sing at my next birthday party? Michael Jackson. This is 1991.
That's going to be...
Yeah, that was tough. It's going to be pretty tough.
Yeah.
But that's the kind of thing you're dealing with here. It's like, they were like, well, let's just book the Tokyo Dome. And meanwhile, SWS, like, that was basically what he said. He was like, well, let's just book the Tokyo Dome. You know, New Japan runs the Tokyo Dome. All Japan was about... I just run it with WWF, actually, the Wrestling Summit, WWF and New Japan. And they're like, so we got to run it too. And, you know, the guy in charge of the SWS, you know, the day-to-day operations is like, we can't even fill, like, 7,000-seat arenas. How the hell are we going to run the Tokyo Dome? And he's like, well, just book people who can fill the Tokyo Dome. That's it. So they went out and cut a deal with the WWF, and that's why there's so many WWF guys on this show. They did not, by the way, fill the Tokyo Dome. No, WWF was not that popular in Japan, especially at this point. I mean, they mostly knew the NWA people, you know, from all, like, because they came over all the time at All Japan. You know, WWF was considered kind of cartoony, and it just wasn't considered, like, the real American wrestling. So, you know, that's the storyline here. So there's a lot of matches on the show. There are, it looks like 12 matches total. Really nothing that, like, I'm like, oh, I wish we had gotten that. I mean, it's a lot of weird matches. You know, some WWF versus WWF, some WWF
versus... Our Foundation versus the Rockers.
Yeah, we could have gotten that. Yeah, I mean, I don't even think it's that good, though.
Probably
like,
not.
Like, the WWF matches, you could see in this match how they the WWF guys handled that. I mean, at this point, you have to remember the Tokyo Dome. This is the, I believe, the fifth ever Tokyo Dome show. Yes, the sixth ever, actually. The sixth ever Tokyo Dome show. So the Tokyo Dome's only a couple years old. It doesn't have any mystique to it. I mean, you can watch this match. Kurt Hennig and Kerry Von Erich treat this like another half show stuff.
Yeah.
And that's how I think almost all of the WWF people treated it, except the main... I mean, the, Hogan tried, because Hogan actually wanted to wrestle in Japan more, and he did. He ended up getting a deal with New Japan not long after this. Remember when he goes to there and says, this WWF title's a trinket!
Yeah.
And he's like, the IWGP...
This is a stepping stone.
Yeah,
but he was misquoted.
He was misquoted, yeah, on video saying that. But yes, so these guys here, they treated this as a house show match. The video and audio quality, by the way, I will provide the link in the description. It's on YouTube. Leaves a little bit to be desired.
Yeah.
It looks like a fifth generation VHS tape or something. So yeah, Henning jumps Kerry as soon as he gets in the ring. He clotheslines him over the top rope to the outside, beats on some more outside. Won't let him get back in the ring. He like hits a knee attack to him when he gets up on the apron. But then Kerry finally pulls him out and punches him repeatedly on the floor to get a little payback. But then Kerry won't let Henning back on the ring.
And
then
this stuff, I think, was like the best part of the match, unfortunately.
But then he finally puts him back in, and then he tosses him right back out again. I'm like, yeah. Can you guys just fucking wrestle? Like, what is going on here?
No, you didn't want them to.
But yes, then they finally got in the ring, and we got a very lackluster lockup, followed by something. I could not tell if this was supposed to be the first time. I rewound it. It was, I guess, Kerry Von Erich punching Kurt Hennig in the gut while he's running by, except I think his fist was like 50 feet from Kurt Hennig's gut, so it looked ridiculous. Kerry then put the Iron Claw on his stomach. The crowd loved that. That was like the first thing.
The Iron Claw,
that was the first thing in this fucking match to get a real reaction. The crowd was going crazy for that Iron Claw. So of course he immediately let go of it and then put on Boston Crab for some reason.
And which like, Miss Perfect kept pulling his tights down.
Yeah, Kurt was like, here's something for the ladies.
Yeah, basically. He kept doing it. It went on for a while. Just, here you go, ladies. Get your photos.
Yeah. Kerry tried for the claw again, this time to the head, but Kurt was able to block it. Kurt hit like a very nice standing drop kick.
Yeah, that drop kick was probably the best move in the match.
That's probably the like one star of my star rating here.
Yeah.
It was a very nice drop kick. That sends us to the outside again. Perfect then grabs a chair. Hits Kerry on the head with it while he's up against the post.
And the referee didn't really care
the
about that.
The ref is right there.
But then...
Doesn't give a fuck.
Which makes it even stranger considering what the finish is, which you'll get to in a minute.
Yeah. Like, this match, by the way, is only like 10 minutes. Let me get the exact time. I should do...
It's probably like 8
it's,
minutes.
No, I think it's 10. I think it's 10.
It's only 10, isn't it?
Oh, you're right. 6:59. Wow. Yeah. But yeah, so Kerry... comes back with an iron claw to the head, but Kurt like gets right out. He's like, ah, fuck this. I'm like, way to kill the fucking claw, buddy. Mm-hmm. Isn't that his whole thing? Kerry then throws Kurt in the ref like a complete idiot, and that lets Kurt, you know, hit or put him head first in the exposed turnbuckle. I don't even remember when it was exposed. So we need a ref bump for that, but not for the chair shot.
Yeah.
Then Kurt hits the perfect plex, okay? This referee... Can you describe what this referee does?
He just keeps crawling.
He keeps crawling. He counts like one, I think.
But then I think that was just him, like, moving along. At first, I'm like, was that a one count? Now he's just moving. Mr. Perfect is laying on him for, like forever. And
like
then the
ref 15 count.
Yeah. And then the ref just gets up and says, it's over. and you had to rewind it three times. I'm like, did he count to three and I missed it? And we rewind it. Like, no, he didn't. He just crawled over and told Mr. Perfect it's over, but then Mr. Perfect finally won, but then he said, no, Kerry won. Why? I don't know.
He DQ'd Kurt for what? He didn't see him throw...
Was it because Kurt ran into him?
But
Kerry threw Kurt.
And plus, he didn't dispute.
Maybe
DQ
it was a
Kurt for
maybe, well,
the
maybe
chair.
It was a very long delay on a DQ
on
from
the chair.
Like he thought about it for a long time. He's like, you know what? That was a DQ. Ding, ding, ding.
Like later, he's like, wait, I think that is against the rules.
And the thing came, and the referee just came on Eric's arm.
The
fans all boo him.
The refs were booing the hell. I mean, they weren't booing Kerry. They were just booing the stupid finish. I think, like, what the fuck are you doing? What is this finish? Like, no.
This sucked.
Yeah, this was dumb. I don't know what the fuck they're thinking. I don't know. I still don't know. What does the finish on Cage Match say? Is it DQ?
There's a DQ.
But what was he DQ'd for?
For being a bad
the chair?
Man.
The turnbuckle? The beam run?
But he didn't see the turnbuckle!
By the opponent? I don't know.
Anyway.
But then he saw the chair like 20 minutes before he called the fucking DQ.
This is so stupid.
And then he's like, none of it, because the chair, it was too delayed a reaction for it to be the chair. He didn't see the turnbuckle, and Harry was the one that threw. Oh, you know what? Who cares?
Who cares? I don't know. 1.5 stars. That's my star rating. It's a bad match. The 1.5 is horrible.
Yeah, I know.
I gave it mostly with a drop kick.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, it's a horrible match. So there you go. There you go. That's your opener here. It can only go up from here, that's for sure.
Yeah,
so we'll be back with our next contest. Alright, so we just watched our second match, which was Jushin Thunder Liger versus Koji Kanemoto from January 4th, 1999 at the Wrestling World in Tokyo Dome, 1999.
Of the Attitude Era.
So this match went 23-11, so pretty long. It's a very weird match, right?
It is.
Very weird match. Yeah. So this is right in the middle of Liger's 9th reign as junior heavyweight champion. It was a 403-day reign. He won it back on February 7th, 1998 from Shinjiro Otani in Hokkaido. And he would lose it to Kanemoto a couple months after this, March 17th in Hiroshima. But yeah, this was his 9th reign. I don't remember how many reigns he had exactly. Let me see. I think he'll definitely had at least 11. Did he never win the belt again after that? Wow. Yeah, I think he had 11 reigns. No, I think his last reign... No, after this he did. But his last reign was pretty early. Yeah, his last reign ended July 20th, 2000.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, so he did not hold this belt again after that. I mean, he went on to hold
the...
challenged one. Yeah, he wanted to hold the junior tag titles 6 times, all after that. He held the GHC junior title in NOAH in 2004. He held the Open the Dream Gate title in Dragon Gate in 2007.
Jeez.
He held the JPW light heavyweight title
yes.
in 2010 and 2011. The CMLL world middleweight title in 2010 and 2011.
Did he win anything in Chikara?
No.
I don't think so.
The CMLL world tag titles with Hiroshi Tanahashi in 2013. The GHC junior tag titles with Tiger Mask in 2013. And his final title... Could you guess it if you don't see it on the screen?
I can see it on the screen.
The NWA World Junior title in
2014. JPW is obviously the most prestigious title on that list.
Jersey All-Pro.
Year did he win it?
2010.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 2010, 2021. That's when they were working on New Japan, remember? Yeah. When they had that show that pretty much bankrupted them.
America, right?
Yeah, the Invasion Tour. So... There's some stuff on this card. So this card is headlined by Scott Norton defending the IWGP title against Keiji Muto. So I believe Muto wins the belt back there. But yeah, there's some other stuff on this card I wouldn't mind getting. Like it has a match in the Shin Hashimoto versus Naoya Ogawa feud, which is very famous. Has Atsushi Onita against Kensuke Sasaki. Like, I wonder what the fuck that was like. Just a straight match, according to those. Not like a death match or anything. But I'm not unhappy we got this match, though. I mean, this match was pretty... It's pretty interesting. So they start this match out by just beating the absolute piss out of each other.
Yeah.
I mean, they are slapping each other in the face.
Hard.
Really hard. They're stomping each other on the mat much harder than you typically see people stomping each other on the mat. I mean, they are just beating the living shit out of each other here. Kanemoto then goes after Liger's leg for a while. The leg work is pretty good, I thought.
Yeah.
But, like...
He went after it for a long time, and then...
Liger blew it off.
It wasn't for a while, but eventually it did seem like, okay, because... Like, it was, like, the first, like, 5 minutes of the match, almost, it felt like. And then it wasn't like right away Liger jumped up and was like running around, but it was later in the match. Quiet. I was like, I thought his... So after all that leg work, his leg doesn't seem to really be bothering him at all.
Yeah.
Because he went after that same leg for a long time.
Yeah.
And then I understand this, like, I guess you can say the story is he's trying to ground him, these Ligers. And for the first, like, 10 minutes of the match, Liger didn't do any, like, flips or dives or anything. Keeping him grounded, which is a good story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how he's trying to stop Liger from getting on the top rope or anything, but...
But yeah, there was some mat wrestling here, which was somewhat slow-paced, but they did keep, like, hitting each other pretty hard to keep me engaged. Yeah. And it's almost like a squash of points. I mean, Kanemoto was just, like, slowly destroying Liger, keeping him grounded, like you said.
But then Liger got the modified surfboard.
Yeah, he came back with a modified surfboard, and then some kind of other double arm hold. That was pretty boring, honestly. Yeah. That was like a long, boring stretch. That went on for a while, right through the 10-minute call.
Yeah, this middle part was when it got like, it really slowed down. You're like,
And then Liger, I started reading reviews for the new Space Jam movie, because you mentioned it's getting killed, and I wanted to read why it's getting killed.
No, it's really Ready Player One Part Two.
It sounds pretty horrible. Liger, like, totally blew off all that legwork, and like you said, but... That, you know, obviously that's bad. But, like, on the other hand, he hit a pretty nice dive off the top rope to the floor. I mean, that dive looked really nice. And it was like, at that point in this match desperately needed the high spot.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, you know, okay, great. And then at one point, Liger tries to, like, lift Kanemoto for the Liger bomb. But Kanemoto counters as soon as he's up on Liger's shoulders and hits a very quick sunset flip power bomb that sends Liger into the turnbuckle behind both of them. That was really cool.
Yeah,
that was a very cool spot. And the crowd was really into this past the 20-minute mark. If you go back and watch a lot of these Tokyo Dome junior title matches in the 90s and early 2000s, that was not a given. There are a lot of long junior matches that did not get any reaction from the Tokyo Dome crowd. I mean, they were kind of famous for not reacting to junior matches. So, you know, the crowd was into it here, which was not a given, like I said, for a junior heavyweight title match in 99. Kanemoto, so he really takes over again. He, like, knocks Liger out, I guess, is the idea. Like, two hard, you know, shotes, you know, Liger's move, the slap to the face. And then he starts, like, just spitting on him. And you were, like, taken aback at that.
Yeah.
Because I guess you're not that familiar with Koji Kanemoto, so you didn't realize
what
like, what a jerk he is. That's pretty much his whole character. Like, this is the period where, like, you know, New Japan Junior Division, it had these very colorful, you know, mass characters like Jushin Thunder Liger and El Samurai, and then it also had, you know, these fucking, you know, grumps. Koji Kanemoto, Shinjiro Otani, Tetsuhiro Takaiwa. So, you know, that was kind of their whole thing. They were like the grumps. But yeah, the crowd was really into this, like I said. And then, so Kanemoto kills him. He starts spinning on him. And then, but he goes for, like, hits this twisting moonsault. Looks really cool. But then instead of going for the pin, he, like, starts waving his finger at the crowd, pulls Liger back up, and pulls him up on the top rope. And that proves to be his downfall. As Liger suddenly recovers, hits the shote on him to knock him off the top rope, and then sets him back up and hits a really sick top rope ringbuster. That was sick as hell. Dropped him right on his neck. And that gets the pin. So, yeah, this is a really weird match that I struggled with how to rate it.
I thought it started out good, ended good, but the middle lost me. So
it's like leg work that gets totally blown off by Liger. Really fun opening few minutes. Really fun ending. And like you said, boring middle.
Not all boring, but there are some,
It was almost a Kanemoto squash at points, but then he loses.
Loses because he was an idiot.
Yeah.
Like, the story is he could have gotten the win there.
I love how NWO Sting is on the screen, by the way. Do you see him?
Where is he?
All the way to the bottom right.
Oh, that's who that is.
He's got the fucking Sting. Jeff Farmer's got the Sting face paint, but this is for life.
I guess that's better than who was on your screen after the last match.
Okay.
You want me to say who it was?
No, not really. Okay. But yeah, it's very strange, but ultimately, really quite enjoyable match. So I'm going to go 3.75.
That's fair.
Yeah, so that's right. I can't quite go 4 because really weird match. All right, folks. So that was match number 2. We'll be back in just a second with match number 3. What?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. So we just got finished with match number 3, which was Toshiaki Kawada and Hiroshi Tenzan in the IWGP Heavyweight Title Tournament semifinal from Wrestling World 2001, January 4th, 2001. So do you know the story behind the IWGP title tournament or no?
No.
Okay. So it's a really weird thing because back in October, so this is like the very start of the New Japan versus All Japan feud that happened when Noah split off from All Japan. Remember, the entire roster leaves All Japan except for, you know, the entire native roster except for Kawada and Fuchi. That's it. And then some of the foreigners stayed too. And that, you know, so All Japan's, you know, devastated by that. So they reach out to New Japan for help. And, you know, they start this New Japan versus All Japan storyline that would carry them through. You know, it started in like the very end of the summer 2000. I remember Fuchi walks out the G1 final and is like, I want to break down the barrier between New Japan and All Japan or something. And then the first main event is the Tokyo Dome in October, where Kawada faces the IWGP Heavyweight Champion Kensuke Sasaki in a non-title match. He beats Sasaki. Sasaki vacates the title the next night. And then do you know what the main event of this show is? The finals of this one-night tournament, which is Kawada versus Sasaki. So why didn't they just have Kawada beat Sasaki for the title and lose it back to Sasaki in the Dome in January?
I don't know.
The only thing I can think of is they didn't trust Kawada to lose the belt back.
I guess.
So this way, if Kawada doesn't come back to lose, I mean, it would have still humiliated Sasaki if he didn't lose back to him, but at least they wouldn't have had to vacate the title. But yeah, so they did this one-night tournament where you had Kojima versus Sasaki and Tenzan versus Nagata in the first round. I don't know why the fuck Chono got a bye. Maybe he won the G1 that year. Let's say.
He probably did.
Yeah, because he won the G1 a million times. Let's say G1 Climax 2001. Oh, it would have been 2000, actually. G1 Climax 2000. Who? Oh, no, it was Kensuke Sasaki. So why the fuck did Chono get a bye? Because I thought the byes would have been Sasaki and Kawada. But no, it was you know, the last champion, the guy who beat the last champion. But no, Chono got a bye for some reason. If you know why Chono got a bye, feel free to at me on Twitter and tell me, at WrestleOmakase, because I have no idea.
Wrestling One Fit.
That's for later. But yeah, so Sasaki beats Kojima, and Tenzan beats Nagata in the first round to open the show, and then Sasaki beats Chono, and this is the match we got, Kawada beating Tenzan in the semifinals, and then the main event is Sasaki beating Kawada. You know, so there's really, I mean, this match is awesome. It's the best match we watched by far, I think.
They
so
beat each other up
really
hard.
Really no regrets here about getting this one.
Yeah.
You know, so Tenzan, he just beats the shit out of Kawada with Mongolian chops, and especially with fucking headbutts. He headbutts Kawada so fucking hard, he busts himself open hard way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it looks brutal. He finishes off what's basically been all Tenzan at this point by hitting the TTD, the Tenzan Tombstone Driver. Do you like that he taught that to Master Wato? I kind of like that. It's
yeah,
like bringing that move back.
Interesting.
Then he drops a huge flying headbutt off the top rope, but he stuns himself and can't cover as quickly as he want to, so Kawada kicks out. Kawada comes back. Well, first of all, he's just so beat up that he like collapses on an Irish whip. And the All Japan fans intend to start chanting for him to try to like rally him, you know. And then Kawada finally comes back with a huge straight punch to the face just after the 5-minute call. That's really his first bit of offense in the match, at least since the opening minutes. And it KOs Tenzan. And they show a replay of this. I'm glad they do. He punched this motherfucker right in the face. I mean, right in the face. You know, the people can't see your reactions. We'd like to verbalize them. He's like making
fake. Well, I don't want to interrupt you.
Well, you can interrupt me.
Really
go ahead.
On about, but the crowd was really. This is definitely the first match, the most hot crowd we've had so far of the three matches we've
well,
watched.
Of course.
The crowd was making a lot of noise. They were really into this.
Yeah.
And it was a really full building.
Yeah. I mean, they were really, really into this. Kawada, he hit some very hard running boots to the face of Tenzan in the corner, including a last one where he seems to just flat out step on this poor man's face. I mean, like, just step on it and go down with him. Tenzan is still able to fight him off when he tries for the stretch plum, though. And then, you know, Taichi does that move nowadays, too.
Mm-hmm.
The stretch plum.
Because well, he's learned it from
Kawada. Yeah, there you go. But yeah, so Tenzan fights off the stretch plum, counters one of Kawada's kicks with the dragon spur, which I think Sasaki does to him, too. It's a very New Japan move, you know, because it's invented by Tatsumi Fujinami, which is why it's called the Dragon Screw. And, like, you know, it seems like a move you should do against the All Japan Invader, you know? Makes a lot of sense. He applies a figure for a leg lock. Tenzan gets out of it.
Is it kind of like the Chikara special?
Or Kawada gets out of it. Sure. There's no inverted... The mystery counter is not kicking the guy in the head, though.
Oh.
Kawada cuts Tenzan off while he's going for the moonsault. He attacks him from behind before he can even start climbing and hits a backdrop suplex for a two count. They hit each other very hard some more. Like, really hard.
Yeah, I couldn't tell if the selling was great, but I don't know if it was actually selling or they were just getting the shit kicked out of them and they were just like, man, they were just in pain because they were hitting each other so hard. Or I don't know where the... I think the line between selling and actually getting hurt was blurred in this match.
Yeah. Kawada goes for a powerbomb, but he can't pull Tenzan's dead weight up, so he settles for kicking him in the face again, just before the 10-minute call. He goes for the powerbomb again, and finally gets it after a long, like, block from Tenzan. Like, Tenzan blocks it for a while, and Kawada just, like, powers him up and just puts him down. And it's a great powerbomb.
Even though he lost in 10 minutes, Tenzan looked strong.
Yeah. And this was awesome. I'm going 4.25 stars. It's the same rating that Meltzer gave at the time, too. Just really hard-hitting, really brutal.
This is a match where it didn't feel rushed, but it felt like they got so much done in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
they beat the piss out of each other.
And those, people should know even back then, Tenzan wasn't like a fast like guy or anything, but this match still felt like so much was accomplished.
Oh, you mean like he wasn't fast in his ring work?
Yeah. I mean, he was quicker than he is nowadays, but he wasn't like... He was very, you know, he was more of a brawler guy.
Yeah. And this would have been before he held the title, I think. I mean, it would have to be.
I think so.
Yeah, because I think his first title run was like... No, I think it's like late 02.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, let's see. Cool. Let's see when he wins the belt for the first time. I remember when he wins it for the first time, he loses it in a month.
Oh, he held it a few times, though.
Yeah, okay. It was 2003.
Okay.
So November 2003. So yeah, he's still quite a few years away from winning the title. But yeah, he loses it a month later to Shinsuke Nakamura for Nakamura's first title win. Anyway, so there is your match. This was awesome.
Yeah, it's the best match we've seen so far.
Could end up being the best one we see, period. Got three more to go.
We'll see.
All right, so we will be back in just a second. All right, so we just watched our fourth match, which was from the Noah Departure Show in 2004, July 10th, 2004. Of course, that was Noah's debut at the Tokyo Dome, their first of two, because they also came back the following year.
And haven't come back since.
And the match we got was the semi-main event, the GHC tag team titles, Misawa and Ogawa defeating Keiji Muto and Tai Okeya in 21:46 to retain the titles. So this is I was like excited when we got this show, but then when I thought about it, I'm like, wait a second, the amazing match, but the one of the best matches ever is the main event, which is not eligible to be picked, you know, since I'm doing it in that main event series. Of course, Kobashi and Nakagawa with the GHC title. The undercard, you know, has a lot of random stuff. I mean, there's the old man match in the opener that they always used to do with Mitsuo Momota and Haruka Egan. There's
how long has Mitsuo Momota been working opening matches time. For Noah?
There was a 6-man tag. My God. There's a couple random tag matches with Gaijin in it. There's another random tag match. Then we get into like the top five, which does have a bunch of title matches. There were two matches here that we could have gotten that I would have been much happier with, I think. This match is amazing. I remember this one. The GHC Junior Tag Titles. This is during the legendary reign of Marufuji and Kenta.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The first ever champions.
Where they
beat Takashi Sugera and Kendo Kasha. He was awesome in that match. Uh-huh. I mean, that match was really good. Mm-hmm. And then the second match we could have gotten that would have been really good to get would have been the GHC Junior Tag Titles with Yoshinobu, or GHC Junior Singles Title, I mean, I'm sorry, with Yoshinobu Kanemaru beating Jushin Thunder Liger. We just talked about that Liger was GHC Junior Champion. Yeah. It's where he loses the belt to Kanemaru.
Suzuki and Takayama.
Then there was the IWGP tag titles being defended. Suzuki and Takayama against Takashi Morishima and Takashi Rikio. I think they're wild too. We didn't get it. It's random. And then semi-main event is when we got here. This was probably the worst.
Sawa versus Muto and two other guys.
It's funny because in the entrance, they don't even really. The other two guys don't even come out with them.
Yep.
Like, they just showed them in the ring.
It was clear who the stars of this match were. And the other two guys were there. So
this is during the.
Neither of them would. Yeah. Someone need to lose.
This is during the 1 year, by the way, title reign for Misawa and Ogawa as GHC tag champions. This reign is pretty awesome, too. I mean, to me, this is like peak Noah. Right?
Yeah. Where 2004, 2005.
GHC Heavyweight Champion is Kobashi. The tag champions are Misawa and Ogawa. The junior champions are Kento Marufuji. That's probably the best. I mean, for sure the best heavyweight champion, and I'm tag almost champs, positive the best junior like tag champions. One of the best tag champions ever, too.
Yeah.
I mean, Ogawa's great, honestly.
This was right before I started collecting the Noah DVDs that they sold at, like, Ring of Honor shows, because Noah was so damn good at the time.
Yeah. Just speak up a little bit.
Okay.
yes, but Misawa... I'm just looking at the waveform. You just speak up a little bit. Misawa and Ogawa here, you know, they have a lot of great matches here. They beat Tanahashi and Nagata to win these titles. I remember that being great. They have a match against Kento Marufuji when they're, you know, tag heavyweight versus junior champs. That's one of my favorite matches.
That match was awesome.
Yeah. This match, they lose the belt, by the way, to Doug Williams and Scorpio. It's a little
too
weird.
Cold Scorpio?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he was in Noah.
January 23rd, 2005. They held him for just over a year. But, yeah, I mean, this is... First of all, this is one of only two matches where Misawa and Muto are in the ring together. The other one is where they team. So this one, it's Misawa and Ogawa against Muto. It's the only match where they face each other.
Yeah.
Because then October 31st, 2004, you know, 3 months later, almost 4 months later, I guess, they team up on the Keiji Muto 20th anniversary Love and Bump. Show.
Love and Bump,
where they face Hiroshi Hase and Kensuke Sasaki in Sumo Hall. I imagine that has to be the main event of that show. Why wouldn't it be?
I would imagine, too.
Okay. What are you saying like that? Because I told you to speak up. You gotta speak up a little.
Yes, I'm talking.
You don't have to scream.
I'm not screaming.
Now you are according to the
waveform.
Can't you find a happy medium?
Trying to.
Okay. Try to. But yeah, so this match, you know, obviously the whole thing here is see Misawa and Muto fight, and neither of them have the job.
Yep.
So they both have a guy on their team who can do the job. The match, the other thing I thought was funny, so I don't know what the fuck was going on in All Japan this period. I did not watch a lot of 2004 All Japan, but like, Muto is teaming up with Taiyo Keiya here, despite Keiya being in R.O.N.D. at this point, which was, I think it's roughly Obsess and Destroy. If Gerard is listening to this, or the worst wrestling All Japan guy, he'll know. But I think it's roughly Obsess and Destroy. He might even know why K is teaming with him. But yeah, so Taka Michinoku is in that stable. He's up on the apron, and when the ring announcer announces Taiyo Keiya, he's waving the R1D flag, he's all excited, and the ring announcer announces Muto, his partner, and Taka turns away. He's like, I'm not going to react for that.
That was strange.
It's because they're heels.
Yeah.
And they don't like Muto, but it's like, why are they teaming
then? Why are they tag teaming?
It is weird. Match was pretty dull early on, not much happening. Keiya and Ogawa worked most of the way for a pretty dead crowd. And then Misawa and Muto came in for like 2 seconds, and the crowd's going insane, and they tag out again. The crowd goes dead again. There was one kind of funny spot where that crafty little rat boy Ogawa, he kicks the referee into Keiya as Keiya is climbing the turnbuckles to like sort of stop him up there. That was funny, at least. Do you know the whole story about Taiokea, by the way?
No.
He's this Hawaiian native who was wrestling in All Japan in the late 90s as, I think, Masukatsu Mossman? Is that what it is? Let me just double check, because I don't want to get the name wrong. I think it's definitely something Mossman. I'm sorry, Mansukea Mossman. Okay. Anyway, so he's wrestling as this foreign character. But then, like we just talked about, All Japan loses every single native wrestler except for two. So they're like, well, we're going to rebrand Mossman. And I always thought the idea was to make him almost look like another native wrestler when he's obviously not a native wrestler. But, like, we'll give him a name that doesn't sound, like, as weird and foreign, you know? So I always thought that was the idea. Maybe it wasn't, but that's what I thought was like. Because they started pushing him pretty heavily. It's like, what else, you know, they got nobody. I mean, they gotta push somebody. But yeah, I always thought the idea was to make him blend in a little more with the roster instead of sticking out as a foreigner. But yeah, so Misawa and Ogawa, where was I in the match here? So after like 10 minutes, or after the 10-minute call, some cool stuff finally happens. Muto... He hits Ogawa with Misawa's old Emerald Frozen. That was awesome. He just like points right at Misawa in the apron.
Like this, yeah.
And then
to piss him off.
Yeah, piss him off.
Misawa comes in like really pissed off, gives him that shining wizard. That was like really awesome.
It was a really cool sequence. The crowd explodes. The only thing I didn't like about it is Misawa like stumbles for no. I mean, Muto stumbles for no reason to take it. I don't know if you saw a lot of Muto matches around this time. He used to have to work over the guy's leg for like an hour to set up the fucking Shining Wizard to get him to collapse to one knee like that. Mm. And here, Muto just like, well, time to take the Shining Wizard, I guess, and just collapses to one knee for no reason.
Yeah.
And Misawa hits the Shining Wizard.
That was a little awkward.
It's one of those spots where I can kind of forgive it because it looks so cool in real time, but if you think about it for more than like 2 seconds, you're like, why did he stumble there? Like, why is he on one knee?
What was the reason for that?
It doesn't make any sense. The match does pick up down the stretch. They do a bunch of high spots in a row. And Kea hits a really nice sleeper suplex on Misawa, but Misawa gets the rope break to stop the pin. I know you said this was kind of hard for you to watch, because of the thing with obviously because of how Misawa died.
Yeah, and I've seen him take these moves, and I'm like, and knowing how he died, it was a little... Because I haven't watched a Misawa match in a long time, and that hearing that music really brought me back, hearing that piano, oh man, like, I remember hearing that live, and... Thank God I went to see that show because that was literally the only time I could see him live in America.
Yeah. Then...
Well, shows. We went to both.
We went to both shows, right?
It was Philly and then...
What did he do in Philly? Was that 30-minute draw or something?
Draw with Morishima and I think Marufuji and Kenta. I forget who was on whose team.
Yeah.
But, and then it was his match with Kenta.
It is funny. I remember the New York City show vividly. Because we had those seats, it was in the in Manhattan the Center.
Stands,
we had those. We had like what it was front row in the upper box, right?
Yeah.
So we had an awesome view of the entire arena and people going crazy for it. And I remember that vividly. I have no memories of the Philly show at all.
I only remember the main event.
But I remember the Misawa show in New York City vividly. It's really funny. But we were at both, like you said. Yeah. I only remember one of them. But yeah, so. Misawa, after that, takes a TKO. He, like, runs right into it, but he does kick out.
It's funny because we were front row for Philly, I think. or like, second row. We were ringside.
Yeah. I mean, I love those box seats at Manhattan Center. Yeah. Those are awesome. Because you could, especially if you have front row box seats, I mean, you could see everything.
Yeah, you can see the whole thing, yeah.
Because that was, like, the smaller one in the building, too.
Yeah. The one upstairs.
Yeah. Misawa almost drops him and almost kills him on the Emerald Frozen. Kea kicks out of it, but Misawa hits the second one, and that finally gets the pin. I'm going to go 3.5. That might be generous on this. It's a tiny bit higher than Meltzer, who went 3.25.
And I felt like they didn't want to... did they not want to show up the main event, so they held back?
That's possible, too.
Yeah.
It definitely wasn't bad, and the parts where Misawa and Muto were in there were quite a lot of fun. There just wasn't that many, honestly. And, you know, Misawa and Taiokea's closing stretch was fun, too. But it was very boring for a long stretch as well, so, you know. It was all about doing Misawa and Muto without either having a job, so. Afterwards, Muto shook hands with Harley Race, who's at ringside. I don't know if you noticed that.
Oh, yeah.
That was kind of cool. But there you go. So we got two to go here. We hit not the current decade anymore, the last decade, but a little more recent. So we'll get to our next match in just a moment.
Yeah.
All right, so we just got finished with match number 5, which was from the New Japan Pro Wrestling Wrestle Kingdom 5 in Tokyo Dome, January 4th, 2011. This is either the last Tokyo Dome of the Yuke's era or the second to last. I don't remember if Bushiroad actually bought it before Wrestle Kingdom 6 or not. They might have. If they didn't, they bought it like the end of the month. So, you know.
Yeah.
Pretty much the last Wrestle Kingdom of the Yuke's era. The match we got was fifth from the top, which was Takashi Sugera and Yoshihiro Takayama versus Hiroki Goto and Kazuchika Okada in a straight-up tag team match. You could not believe this was Okada.
No. You had to tell me seven times.
You've never seen this version of Okada, have you?
I don't think I watched TNA when he was Okada. I knew of him. Maybe once. I kind of remember flipping on once and seeing that I'm like, oh, that's a racist gimmick.
Green Hornet guy.
Yeah. Well, for one thing, he looks so short in this match because he spent a lot of the time in the ring with Takayama.
Yeah.
He's Okada's pretty tall, and I kept thinking, like, when the match starts, I just see this guy in these in the tights he was wearing, and
with like these Japanese kanji tights.
I thought it was Tajiri.
Yeah, honestly. Had like this thing hanging over
and hair, and I thought for sure.
So he has brown hair. He has a goatee.
Yeah,
it looks nothing like current Okada.
It wasn't like, I kept thinking you were lying to me.
Yeah.
It wasn't until like, okay, I guess I see it in his face, but Jesus, he looked different. And he looked so short. Being in the room with Takayama, it looked like it really dwarfed his size. Like, it made him look... So Kata's pretty tall, like I said.
Yeah. I think he's like 6'2 or 6'3.
Yeah, but Takayama, and compared to a lot of other guys in New Japan, he towers over a lot of people.
Yeah.
But Takayama
he's 6'3.
Is 6'5, so...
191 centimeters, 6'3. I mean, that's what he's billed as. Yeah. It could be probably a little shorter.
Goto looked exactly the same.
So did Sugera, honestly. Yeah. Sugera looked almost... It's been 10 years and Sugera just looks pretty much the same. I didn't mean to snort. I'm sorry. So Okada came back just to do this one match. He was in the middle of his amazing...
TNA run.
Which
made TNA dead to New Japan.
For like a decade. Until they finally forgave them, it seems like. But yeah, he had already... he had not yet been okay. No, he had already been Okada.
Oh, he had.
So Okada was
Samoa Joe's.
Yeah, that was. Wait, where the hell is Okada? Let me see. I thought I just saw the name on here. Okay, so he had. Yeah, he had just done. Oh no, he's about to become Okada. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
So his last matches were. He'd been working TNA Explosion exclusively. He did Okay, September 7th, 2010. Inc. Jesse Neal and Shannon Moore defeats Kiyoshi and Okada on Explosion Episode 315. Rob Terry defeats Okada November 9th, Explosion 322. Stevie Richards defeats Okada in fucking 2010, November 16th, 2010. I don't know if he was Abyss's therapist at that point, Dr. Stevie. Inc. defeats Kiyoshi and Okada again. A match so fine they had to run it twice, apparently. Explosion 327. So he goes from losing to Inc. again on December 7th, 2010 to teaming up with Hiroki Goto in the Tokyo Dome at Wrestle Kingdom 5,
yeah.
January 4th, 2011. Then his next televised match will be Okada defeats D'Angelo De Niro by DQ in 2 minutes and 20 seconds on Impact number 350, March 15th, 2011.
That's the Pope, D'Angelo De Niro?
So he only wrestles two matches at Okada total. It seems like. So he wrestles once as Suicide after debuting as Okada on March 28th. He loses to Douglas Williams on May 3rd on Explosion again. Then he does the New Japan Invasion Attack shows in East Coast. You know, the shows almost bankrupt the Jersey All Pro in May. Then he's Okada again all of a sudden in TNA for his last ever appearance, which is something called the Championship Challenge Tournament First Round, where he lost to Alex Shelley in 6:49 on Explosion again.
Mm.
Why the fuck the Championship Challenge Tournament First Round was happening on Explosion, I can't tell you. But yeah, June 13th, 2011, he's never wrestled in TNA again, and then he shows up January 4th, 2012 to beat Yoshihashi as the Rainmaker and then challenge Tanahashi at the end of the night and get booed out of the building by the fans who are like, who the fuck are you to challenge Tanahashi when he just set the fucking all-time defense record at the time?
Yeah.
By beating Minoru Suzuki.
And then he beat
Tanahashi a month later, the Rainmaker Shock. But yeah, so he's here just like a weird in-between to be like, hey, it's more, this match is just like them reminding you, hey, you know Okada exists, and we got big plans for him. So yeah. Here he is. He's in a big match here at the Tokyo Dome, fifth from the top. But he is the guy to job. Now, another guy they had big plans for was Tetsuya Naito. Do you know what he was doing the next match? Don't look at the screen. Do you know what he was doing?
I didn't even...
Okay.
He's not in the next match.
He's in the next match. He's in match number 8. It's not on him. New Japan War for some reason.
Wow. Well, then...
He is losing to Jeff Hardy in the TNA World Heavyweight title match.
That's why it's...
I wish we had gotten that one.
Oh, you meant that, the computer screen. I was looking for it up there. I guess it's copyrighted by somebody. TNA.
I think, or they just don't want to show it because the match is horrible. Because remember, that's the Jeff Hardy drugged up era?
Yeah.
When he shows up and...
I do kind of want to see it, though.
I've seen it. It's pretty horrible. Yeah. I kind of wish we had gotten that. But yeah, I mean...
You can find it somewhere?
Okay. It's online. Yeah, so the main event of this show was Kojima losing the IWGP Heavyweight title to Tanahashi, which kicks off that reign where Tanahashi...
Was that Tanahashi's first title? No.
It's like his third or fourth, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, that kicks off the reign where he sets the new defense record.
Okay.
Yeah.
That kicks off his big reign.
Yeah, his big reign. But yeah, the semi-main event is Masato Tanaka and Togi Makabe. We have Nakamura and Goshi Ozaki. I remember liking that, so that would have been cool to get. Prince Devitt against Kota Ibushi for the junior title. Yuji Nagata versus Minoru Suzuki. No DQ, no countout. Toru versus Rob Van Dam.
Oh.
This is the match that gives us Yano, Tor,
Ru.
This is why that exists. Do you not know that?
No, I never.
That's why you started doing that, because you assume Rob Van Dam.
Okay.
This is the match. This is why a decade later we still have Yano, Tor, Ru, and then this is the match. Tenzan versus Suzuka, whatever. Hector Garza and Jushin Thunder Liger against La Sombra, Andrade, and Mascara Dorada. I don't know what his fucking WWE name is.
He's never on TV, so I can't even tell you either.
Bad Intentions versus Manabu Nakanishi.
I meant the leak.
Oh, thank you.
I got it.
Bad Intentions versus Manabu Nakanishi and Strongman versus Beer Money.
I love Beer Money.
A three-way tag title match. Oh, okay, this tag title, I wish we had gotten this, honestly. Yeah. Koji Kanemoto and Ryusuke Taguchi versus Kenny Omega and Taichi, who both would have been representing All Japan Juniors at this point. Yeah. I think that's awesome. And the opener was Chaos, Gato, Jado, Ishii, and Yujiro Takahashi against Tama Tonga, Babyface Tama Tonga, Tiger Mask, Tomoaki Honma, and Mataru Inoue. This card's amazing. This card is like a snapshot in history. But yeah, I kind of want to just watch this other show now. But yes, the tag match we got, I would not call this amazing. This was pretty boring a lot of the way. So Okada jumps Takayama right away with a drop kick for the bell. Goto goes after Sugera on the outside. And Sugera, he eventually, Okada tags back in Goto. And Goto and Sugera beat the shit out of each other for a little bit before Goto puts Sugera down with a hard headbutt. Okada tags back in, but he gets beat on by Sugera, and then Takayama beats him on the outside. Not very interesting. Sugera puts him in a chin lock. Not a move I'd go with in a 10-minute tag match. This heat segment on Okada is pretty dull. Not much happens. Okada finally gets to make a tiny bit of a comeback. He hits a nice-looking STO on Sugera before tagging in Goto. And then Goto and Sugera, they struggle over a front suplex for a while before Sugera just fucking tosses him and sends him flying. And then he hits a hard running knee in the corner, but Goto blocks a second running knee and drops him right on his head with a German suplex. Sugera hits his own German, but Goto no-sells it and hits a nice roaring lariat. Okada holds his own against Takayama after they both tag in, but then he gets double-teamed, and Sugera throws him over to Takayama. That was kind of cool. It's like an assist to go to sleep. Yeah. Almost, where he has him up on his shoulders, just tosses him, and Takayama hits him with a knee, more to the gut, though. And then Goto runs in to make the save. Okada suddenly hits a big German suplex on Takayama out of nowhere. That looked impressive, but he couldn't hold the bridge. And then Okada, he starts to pick Takayama up like he's going for an air raid crash or something like that. But Takayama actually manages to sunset flip him. I was like, what the f-? I had to rewind it. I was like, did I just see that? Mm-hmm. Yoshihiro Takayama in 2011? Was able to do a sunset flip. He was already moving pretty slow by this point, honestly. I couldn't believe he pulled that off. And he pulled off it was a good sunset flip.
Yeah.
That got a two count. And then Takayama.
I was surprised. I remember I was like, what? And that happened, and I was like, oh, okay. At that time, he was able to do it.
By the way, I forgot the Tenzan Iizuka match I mentioned earlier was the deep sleep to lose match.
What the fuck does that mean?
It's like a 10 count knockout, I think.
So it's the last man standing.
Yeah. Deep sleep to lose.
Strange.
All-time great name. Yeah. I just saw that on the TV screen, so. And Nagata and Suzuki was no justice, no light, just a regular match. I think the Makabe Tanaka was the absolute exhaust. I don't know. And the other ones were New Japan versus Noah Battle Combustion. So, anyway. But yeah, so Takayama, he drops Okada on his fucking head with a backdrop suplex. What a suplex this was. Very close near fall. And then he hits the Everest German. That's the pin. This was boring as shit for a while, but it man ended on a high note.
Yeah.
So I went three and a quarter.
That's fair.
It was
fair,
pretty good by the end because it really ended on a high note.
But it really picked up at the end. Yeah. There was a lot of cool shit.
Yeah. But it was very boring for a while.
It was pretty boring.
Especially for a match that's this short. I mean, it was boring for quite a while. All right. Because what was the match time? Let me get it. It was 12:08 actually. A little longer than I thought. A couple minutes longer. But, you know, pretty short. All right. So that will take us to our final match. Oh, well, you got to give it away. I mean, well, I guess they're going to know
they're
anyway.
They're
going to know
the
in 2 seconds.
Unless you think your listeners can't read.
That's true. I forgot about the match list. All right, folks. So we'll be back in just a second. All right. So we just watched our sixth and final match.
Actually, we didn't just watch it because we had food.
Do the people need
to
know?
You're lying
that?
To them. And I won't stand for it.
Yeah, it's okay. We watched our sixth match, paused to eat a late dinner because it's 9 p.m., and now we're recording.
Just a little bit of SmackDown, but not
like
really.
A minute, I think.
We didn't get past the opening video package. Because...
Do anything else you want to tell them? Do you want to tell them what we ate? Do you want to tell them?
No. You're not
where I bought this fan.
I don't know where you bought it. I know. Do you want to tell them?
Is that on the thing, by the way? Put that on the towel.
Oh.
Because it can't be driven water on these nice sheets. Thank you. Because it's like an air conditioner fan, folks. It has like, you put water in the bottom and it makes it a little misty.
Wow, really?
Wow. Yeah, it's nice.
Life is...
So, our last match is from Wrestle Kingdom 7, Evolution.
Mm-hmm.
In the Tokyo
2013.
January 4th, 2013.
Okada and Tanahashi.
So, we didn't get Okada and Tanahashi.
No, that was the main event.
That was the main event, yeah. It's Tanahashi beating Okada to retain the title. That match was like, I remember I covered that one in my Okada Tanahashi series. That match owns.
Yeah, that match
I
was
mean,
awesome.
I mean, I forgot how good that match was. I honestly think it's their best Tokyo Dome match. I think it's better than 2015 or 2016. Maybe 2015 is close. One of them is really disappointing.
I was going to say 2015. I think 2016 was disappointing.
2016 I think is disappointing. Maybe it is 2015. I don't know. But 2013 was great. 2013 was awesome. I mean, I had very little memory of it before I watched that one. And
actually,
that,
no. I think it was 2015. That was wasn't that the year where Nakamura and Ibushi did the better match? And I think they had the best match of the show 2016.
I don't know. I have to go back and look at my notes, I guess. But the point is, I think this was the best one.
Okay.
The best Tokyo Dome match. Because there's better matches... The two later in 2013 ones.
I love the match they had in Dallas too, but that I have biased.
That's like a best
I saw
of.
Live.
That's like more like a best of series. But the two other 2013 matches, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Invasion Attack and King of Pro Wrestling. Mm-hmm. Those are the two best matches
between Okada and
Tanahashi. Yeah, I mean Invasion Attack is number one and King of Pro Wrestling is number two. But yeah, so this we did not get that because obviously no main events. I wish we had gotten the semi-main. Nakamura and Sakuraba. Mm-hmm. That match is so good. Intercontinental title match. Third from the top is Makabe Shibata. Fourth on top is Tenkoji against Keiji Budo and Shinjiro Otani. What we got was fifth from the top, right above Nagata and Suzuki again.
Mm-hmm.
They've met the Tokyo Dome like three times, I think. Right above that, we got Prince Devitt beating Kota Ibushi and Loki to retain the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title in 14:45. A lot of stuff to talk about here. First of all, Loki, what was all Loki wearing? You want to tell the story?
It wasn't. He looked dumb, not because he was dressed as the Hitman. Not because he was dressed like that. I mean, he looks cool dressed as the Hitman character. The fact that he's wrestling in this stupid outfit looks so hokey and dumb. He's running around with you got these two guys dressed like wrestlers, and this guy with a fucking suit and gloves and dress shoes, and I'm like,
What?
It looked stupid.
I swear, there was one moment...
It looks specifically stupid in New Japan.
In New Japan, yeah. Yes. I swear to God, 1 or 2 minutes into the match, the look on Prince Devitt's face, he was like, what the fuck is he wearing? I swear that's what he was... Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah.
That's what it looked like to me, he was thinking. I know... I remember reading about this, like, saying that they didn't want him to do this, and he was like, tough, I'm going to do it.
And they fired him right
the show. So they fired him.
So this was like the last straw. He was already kind of paying the ass.
They were already pissed about a lot of things.
Yeah, he refused to go to Fukushima, which had that nuclear accident, but it's safe now, but he refused to go.
He knows. Well, I don't know if you know this, but he's one of the people that doesn't want to get a vaccine.
Yeah, he's one of these people that thinks they know more than scientists. Now, your buddy Tony Khan will not go to the entire island of Japan, supposedly, because of Fukushima.
I think that might be a bullshit excuse, though.
Well, he refused to go and sent the... basically sent the Young Bucks and Kenny to negotiate for him, which is one of the reasons why the New Japan AEW thing didn't happen right at the start. But it's kind of water under the bridge at this point, because they're obviously working together now, but it's one of these things where apparently New Japan was very insulted. I don't know about very insulted. They were just like, okay, you want to have a relationship with us, the fucking owner should be here, basically, and he wouldn't go. So Low Ki gets fired, like, literally the night after this. I mean, it's not his last match in Japan, because he comes back for a tour of All Japan, although he only lasts like four matches in All Japan before he never comes back there either later in the year.
Did they do a New Year's Dash show?
No, he didn't do New Year's Dash. Okay. So he was fired, I guess, right after the show. But yeah, he shows up in 4 matches in All Japan. He loses in the Royal Road second round to Akebono, and that's his last All Japan match in September 2013. Then he's back in Impact, I guess, because he's on the TNA Bound for Glory 2014 that was at Corkin Hall, where he loses a X Division 3-way to Samoa Joe and Kaz Hayashi. And that's it. Those are his last appearances in Japan, so October 2014. All because he had to wear the Hitman costume.
That's so stupid.
This is also during the middle of Prince Devitt's famous junior title run. He won the belt November 2012 from Low Ki in Osaka at Power Struggle. And he held it all the way until January 2014. So he'll hold it another year after this until he loses it to Kota Ibushi at Wrestle Kingdom 8, a few months before he leaves the company for WWE. And apparently he returned... Oh, I guess I shouldn't tell you this. Spoiled you, I guess. He returned on SmackDown tonight. So
who?
Finn Balor, Prince Devitt.
Oh, I don't care. I heard he was probably going to be there.
Yeah, so they people didn't seem to really give a shit. So 7 years or 8 years later, I guess nobody really cares.
What does that leave... NXT,
I don't know. Don't they still have the Fallen Prey guy?
Who?
Fallen Prey, man.
Who the fuck is that? Karrion Kross?
I guess so. Isn't that theme song called Fall?
I think so. Prey. But he's like, they're like teasing a feud, which I'm not sure can happen.
Well, oh, him and Joe?
But if Joe can wrestle, then what? I have questions.
So why? Okay, I have questions too. First of all, why did they have Karrion? Did you see that Karrion Kross wrestle on Main Event? Where they took away his entire entrance, they just had him walk out like doop de doo.
I heard he was on Main Event.
Yeah,
that's what he did.
So they got rid of. They didn't have Scarlett. They didn't have the lights. They didn't have any. He just walked out like, oh, I'm Karrion Kross. He looked like a fucking Kaw on SmackDown, like the generic entrance for Kaw, for a creator wrestler.
Why?
I don't know why. Why does WWE do anything? He's doing all he had was a theme song. Still, that was it. They took away the entire flashy entrance. They're like, yeah, just go walk out there.
Okay.
I don't get it either. But yeah, anyway, so Devitt, of course, was a few months away here from the big Bullet Club turn that would basically change the face of wrestling, at Invasion Attack, when he turned Sierra onto Gucci, who had been his partner in Apollo 55, and, joins up with Bad Luck Fale, and the rest is history, you know? They officially formed Bullet Club.
Does AEW ever happen without that?
Probably not,
stable,
right?
Forming.
Probably not.
No, I agree.
How the fuck would it?
It started a domino effect that eventually led to All In, which led to AEW.
Yeah. I mean, there's no... WWE is still a fucking, complete monopoly.
It's kind of like Hot Topic's fault in a way.
Yeah, Hot Topic too, I guess.
It's because WWE couldn't get anyone over when Hot Topic guys were at WrestleMania. They saw all these people wearing Bullet Club shirts, and they were like, how come we don't sell that shirt in our stores, WWE? And when you give us all your other guys, but your top-selling faction, you don't give us any shirts for. And they're like, oh, well, we don't do them. And they're like, oh. I have to go. You're not going to call any... No, I just got to go.
Yeah. I remember, that is a pretty funny story. But yeah, so this match is Devitt, Loki, and fucking whaughtever the hell. Kota Ibushi, that guy. This match, it starts with a typical, kind of hokey three-way opening sequence. They're all trying to hit each other. They all duck each other. And then we just keep switching off pairs.
Yep.
So Ibushi and Devitt do a singles match for a while, a pretty pedestrian one. Loki pulls Devitt off the apron of the floor. He takes over against Ibushi. The two of them are elbowing each other to get the five-minute call. Devitt comes right back in after that. It takes a while, actually. Goes after Loki. Now the two of them are just fighting, and it's like, this is a three-way match, and you guys are just going to... Like, they do this...
Two and two.
You point out they do this in a lot of three-ways, but it felt really egregious here.
Yeah. Usually there's at least some double teams and something in other three-ways. This, they just kept pairing off the whole time.
They did eventually, I guess.
Eventually, towards the end, they started doing, like, spots involving all three of them, but they'd always, like, throw some guy out of the ring, and they'd, I guess, like, fall asleep for 2 minutes, and the two of them would wrestle.
I mean, it's why I can't stand three ways in general.
Yeah, same.
But this was, like, an extreme example. Loki, at one point, decides to do an abdominal stretch on Devitt. I'm like, why an abdominal stretch, buddy? You got less than 15 minutes, you're a junior title match, just do spots.
Why does he do anything?
Kota comes back in with a nice springboard dropkick on Loki to take him out, but Devitt easily knocks him aside and then hits his typically great Tope Kan Hilo on both of them on the outside. And then it finally picked up a bit after that with all three guys doing spots together instead of just doing these separate singles matches. Most of the spots are pretty nice. Ibushi, he nearly beats Devitt after his double flip moonsault, you know, where he lands on his feet and then does another standing moonsault. And then he does this crazy sit-out last ride that he normally does, but looked even better than normal, I think. Well, probably because Devitt weighs like 50 pounds. Loki makes the save, though. Key lands on his feet on an Ibushi German attempt and then just fucking drills Ibushi with an immediate double foot stomp to the face. That looked like it sucked for Ibushi.
Yeah.
Maybe Cody going back there was like, fire this asshole.
That's possible.
But I just thought it was funny. Loki takes off his jacket.
Yeah,
it's like the fucking video game nerd version of Lawler pulling down the straps. I clapped very loud. I'm sorry, folks. He takes off the jacket, but then he hits a key crusher on Ibushi. Looks like he killed him again. But Devitt comes flying in off the top rope with a huge drop kick to break up the pin. Loki goes for his Tree of Woe double foot stomp, only for Ibushi to interrupt with a springboard Rana. That's a pretty amazing spot. They pulled it off perfectly. And the champion, Devitt, just kind of hanging there, unable to do anything, and just having to hope he kicks out. That was pretty great, too. What was the finish of the match? I forgot to write it down.
I just remember thinking every time I see this finish, if Loki was on his way out, why the hell didn't he get pinned?
Oh, yeah, Devitt pinned Ibushi.
Yeah, Devitt pinned Ibushi.
Okay.
And I always find it strange.
It was a foot with a foot stomp?
I believe so.
Oh, no. He hit the Bloody Sunday off the top, I think.
Yeah.
So he hit the Bloody Sunday off the top, which was cool, and that was the pin. So, when I first started watching, I didn't remember this match at all. When I first started watching this match, and I looked at Dave's rating, I was like, what the fuck? Dave gave this 4.5.
I know. Yeah.
And it has an 8.14 on Cage Match. I think Cage Match is closer. I would go...
What is it on Cage Match?
8.14, which is like 4 stars.
Oh, yeah.
I would go, I don't know, 3.75 or 4. I mean, the spectacular stuff is really spectacular, but like, all that like pairing off shit really is pretty, really boring. And I don't know. I'll go 3.75. I don't think it's 4 stars.
Okay.
Why, you disagree?
No, that's about right. Yeah, I wouldn't go all the way to 4 stars.
Yeah. I mean, 4.5 is insane. I don't know. Big Dave was thinking.
Things were different back then.
Dave loves his spots.
If this match came out today, I think he would give a different rating. Yeah.
I think you're too overconfident. But anyway, so I guess that'll wrap things up. This was a little shorter than I thought it would be. Maybe we didn't talk enough about the matches. Did we let the people down?
We let you. The selection of matches
is random. Yeah,
and
a lot of them were.
There
short.
Are a lot of other matches I would have had a lot more to say about. Like,
I'm not blaming you. Yeah. I'm saying in general we didn't have a lot to say. I guess. Oh, that's okay. People can deal with only an hour podcast instead of my normal.
Maybe next time do 8
hours.
Matches.
No, that's too many. Look how long it takes to. Even
you
though
you said
only,
it wasn't that long.
You just screamed. Do you see where you screamed
here? Okay, well, you just said it wasn't that long.
But we started recording this at, 4 o'clock, and now it's 9?
Okay, well, what do you want me to tell you?
I'm just like, where'd the time go?
I don't know.
Because it's already like only an hour and 15 minutes. I'm clearly stalling for time, folks.
Well, we didn't have that long an intro.
I think we've done these retro-led ones around this length, too, anyway, thinking about it. Yeah. So it's nice. Give people a week off from two-hour, three-hour podcasts. I almost never do 3 hours anymore, anyway. Usually do, like, 2 hours. So, anyway. Folks, where can you find Quinlan? Of course, you can find him on Twitter.
I'm _not_Quinlan.
Are you Quinlan?
No.
Okay. And folks, you can find me on Twitter at TushanchuanLA. I never say that.
At Otakon.
At Otakon, that's right. This will be the last free episode for Otakon, so I should plug that. So, if you're going to Otakon 2021... Actually, no, it's not the last free episode. What are you doing? You're freaking me out. There's still, like, another... There's still two more episodes.
Weeks.
Yeah, so it's plenty of episodes.
Okay, so why are you yelling at me? You're the one that doesn't know what time it is.
Anyway, you can find us both at Otakon. You're going to do what? Final Fantasy 14?
Yes.
So what are you going to tell the people about Final Fantasy 14?
Probably about the Nier Raid and maybe the music, and we're going to talk about the stupid shit they did recently, and we're going to talk about the future.
So you went from screaming to muttering.
The past. Well, we have one person on our panel that's played 1.0, which not many people have. So.
Oh, that's Jeffrey?
Yes, he played 1.0.
That was when everybody hated it.
Literally the only person I know that played 1.0.
That's when everybody hated it, right?
1.0, yes.
Do you want to... We should tell the story.
That almost bankrupted Square.
Yeah, it was really bad.
Yeah.
We should tell the story, by the way, about the... I don't know if we told this on the air before. So, there's this guy. We don't have to say his name, because I doubt he listens, but I mean, why bother? Why bury some guy? We don't have to. But there's this guy who hosts these really horrible panels... Anime Next and Anime Boston every year, right? And
You're not narrowing it down, but okay.
And he was hosting this panel on Final Fantasy.
Yes, okay.
At Anime Next. Oh, you're right, because it could have been either one of them.
Yeah.
There were two different horrible Final Fantasy panels that year.
Yeah.
So, Jeffrey is our friend. You just mentioned him. And you guys are in this Final Fantasy panel. The panel's about 2 hours long, right? I think. It was 2 hours and 90 minutes. I think it was 2 hours, you said.
Yes, it was 2 hours.
Okay. So you guys... I'm not there for this. So I'm just... No. I'm telling the second hand. So you guys are at this panel. It's horrible. Why is it horrible? Give me a reason. I know the guy, so I really know why it's horrible, but paint a picture for the
He kept leaving the panel room.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too.
He would play a video and then just get up without saying anything and walk out.
If people have never been to AnimeCon, you really should not be leaving the panel room during your own panel.
We figured out later he was going to get water, but... He wasn't saying anything. He would just get up and leave. And we're like, where is he going? And the whole room would sit there like, did he just leave? Why?
And so he's going through all these Final Fantasies. Like, he's going through the games in chronological order.
Yeah, screwing stuff up about them, you know, but whatever.
The panel's horrible.
Panel's pretty bad, yes.
Jeffrey, our friend, is sitting there with you guys. Somebody wants to leave. I don't remember who. All of you wanted to leave.
One of us did leave. James left.
Oh, James left. Okay. Shout out to James.
Yeah. And Jeffrey said, I want to hear what he says about FF14. I love it.
Because you guys love the... it's like,
I wasn't playing at the time, but he was. And he was really wanting to wait. So we sat there
I have to hear what he said about Final Fantasy 14.
He gets to Final Fantasy 14 and just says, yeah, it's an online game. I heard it's bad. I haven't played it. Moving on. And then he goes to 15. And Jeff and I burst out laughing so hard.
Because Jeffrey's
and
made it all
everyone
notice, guys.
But I was laughing at Jeffrey for making us sit there for so long just to hear nothing. He was not happy. We left at that point. To this day, I don't know what he's... We were only an hour through the two-hour block.
Yeah.
So, unless he either spent the next hour talking exclusively about 15, or... I don't know. Because the only game he had left was 15.
But he also had the... what was it called? Master Quest? The American Super Nintendo?
No, Mythic Quest.
Mythic Quest, thank you.
And Crystal Chronicles. Maybe he talked about those.
Isn't there another Crystal Chronicles, too?
There's more than one, yeah. Yes. And there's those ones
the Game Boy games aren't really Final Fantasy.
They just named them to make money.
Yeah.
Maybe he talked about those. I don't know. I left wondering, did he spend the next hour talking about 15, or did he just end the panel early, or did he just talk about his laptop, because he's been known to do that, or... They do a tribute to Stephen Hawking.
So
does he even know to do that?
The same panelist. So we went to a panel, I think at Anime Boston the same year, that was supposed to be like 90s anime or something. And we all sit down, and this is how he starts the panel. No introduction, no context. He's just like, so I'm getting a new laptop. And he introduces a slide about his laptop. Not his new one. his previous laptop he's using. Like, this is my laptop. I've had it for a long time. Blah, 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 blah. Meanwhile, you have to understand, nobody... If you've never been an AnimeCon panelist, I've asked the question when I host the same panel each year, how many people have been. And keep in mind, this is the same exact panel. I do Japanese indie music almost every year. I've done Japanese pro wrestling a bunch of years at different conventions. I usually ask, like, hey, have you ever been to one of my panels before? Like, one person might raise their hand. Like, the turnover is immense. People just go to whatever panel looks cool at that time.
Yeah.
You know? So that's what most people do. So you do not get repeat. So I'm trying to explain that all of us in this room had never been to one of his panels before, had no idea why the fuck he was starting. He's starting his panel like, people really want to hear about my computer. Like, they have followed the saga of my computer all this time throughout all the other panels I've hosted, and they really want to hear about it. And everybody's looking around like, what is this guy talking about? Like, we're here for, you know, we're here to hear about Inuyasha, whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
And he's talking about his computer. And then, he has a slide. He built a slide on his old laptop. And as a teaser, he's like, later on, we'll talk about my new laptop that I'm getting to get people to stay for more of the panel. We'll get to hear about his new laptop. No one cares. Yeah. So this guy is amazing. I'm not gonna name him, because why bury a person? You don't have to. But anyway, there you go. Space Jam: A New Legacy. It all comes full circle. Mm-hmm. Advertising right now on my TV. I'm really killing time here, folks, as you can tell. I got to an hour 20. It's about what I wanted to do. So most of you probably turned it off when you realized the wrestling content was over. But if you stuck around, thank you very much. I love you. Quinlan, do you love them too?
Yeah.
Everybody loves you. Everybody loves you, listener.
I love everybody.
Everybody loves you, listener. Thank you for listening. Of course, don't forget to check out the Omakase Patreon. Patreon.com/WrestlingOmakase. You can hear the series of Tokyo Dome main events, doing them all in chronological order. We got Takada versus Hashimoto coming up this week. Probably do one more this week too, which I don't remember what it is off the top of my head. But you know, it'll be something. I think it's Fujinami and Hashimoto, maybe something like that, or Hashimoto Choshu. It's probably Hashimoto against an old guy, I think. But we'll get to it, whatever it is. But yeah, so we'll be continuing on through the mid 90s. Gonna get to the Hashimoto Ogawa matches soon, which are crazy. So that'll be something. Yeah. In the meantime, of course, you can follow us on Twitter at WrestleOmakase, Wrestling with Fit. If you want to comment on my looks on Twitter, you can go find me on Twitter and do that. It seems what people are doing lately for some reason. Thank you for listening, and I will see you next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.